my slippers. I got to explain this to you. They are exclusive. 3-tier cushioning system. It's like walking on clouds, right? We took the MyPillow patented foam, the one that you know and love, and they created a solid layer to provide incredible comfort. Don't forget to use the promo code Carter, C-A-R-T-E-R, and you will receive 40% off of your My Slippers. Your whole family is going to love it. Hey everyone, welcome to the Sarah Carter Show. Today's podcast is brought to you by the Association of Mature American Citizens, the only conservative alternative to AARP. Go to amac.us/Carter. More about the great organization AMAC in a minute, but first I want to tell you what we've got coming up on the show, and I'm very excited to have Senator Marsha Blackburn from the great state of Tennessee back on the show with us today. She's got a lot to talk about, everything from what's been happening in our nation, the horrific issues that we've been dealing with as far as racial divides, what lawmakers are doing about it, how some lawmakers are feeding into it. What's happening with our law enforcement community. Also, the tragic death of Micaiah Bryant. You know, she was 16 years old. There was, we'll go into details about the altercation that took place in front of the foster care family's home that she was living at, and her the tragic shooting. I just returned actually this morning. I barely slept. I was in Columbus, Ohio last night, talking to folks out there about what happened, about how they're feeling. I also had an opportunity to talk to some of the police officers. I'm going to tell you all about that on the show. Remember, we're also talking about Iran and what the Senator Marsha Blackburn and others have this incredible bill that they are doing to try to stop the Obama legacy from rising once again, the murky waters of the Iran nuclear deal. Remember that? Where we just dumped billions of dollars back, gave them their money back here. You know, even though you're sponsoring terrorism, we are going to do everything we can to support you, Iran, that Iran. Now, of course, the Biden administration is nothing more, in my opinion, than the President Obama administration. And we are going to see them try to bring that back. The Senate obviously is trying to fight that. They believe they have some Democrats that will be on their side. I don't know. They may not be able to do this, but we'll talk to her about that. We'll talk to her about the border. I'm going to talk about the border. That is something we got to pay attention to no matter what. There's lots of subjects, lots of topics that we have to talk about. But first, remember, I was going to tell you about AMAC. If you're anything at all like the millions of frustrated Americans, I know I'm frustrated, looking for an alternative to that other senior organization, and you want to support an organization that actually takes responsibility and action, then you need to join AMAC. AMAC is the Association of Mature American Citizens. Guys, it's the fastest growing conservative 50 plus organization in America. AMAC believes in the values that have made America great. That's faith, family, and freedom. AMAC offers an alternative to just about every benefit that AARP offers. But guess what? It doesn't come with a liberal agenda. We don't need a liberal agenda. We need a conservative agenda, or at least somebody who's willing to stand up and fight for what we believe in. I stand with AMAC. I hope that you will too. I encourage you to join today at amac.us/Carter. That's amac.us/Carter, C-A-R-T-E-R. The benefits of membership are great, but the cause is even greater. Join today at amac.us/Carter. Okay. I got to tell you, I feel like there is something happening in our nation and we have to find a way to fix this. Our communities are being divided more and more every day. I feel like maybe people just aren't listening to each other. And I feel as though lawmakers and politicians are using such horrible tragedies. You know, and the reason they can do this is because we all have social media, right? We're all walking around with our phones and everything. And I'm not saying that it's not right to videotape stuff when it happens so that we know what's going on. But they're using these tragedies to benefit themselves politically and socially, and not to the benefit of the people of our nation, not to our children, not to our communities, not to the people that are most affected. And I was there in Columbus, Ohio last night. And I've been to Columbus many times. I love the state of Ohio. I actually did a documentary. Part of my documentary was there in Columbus and Franklin County and Dayton. It was called Not in Vain, V-E-I-N, Not in Vain, which dealt with the opioid epidemic, which, by the way, is still an epidemic in this nation. The only reason why those numbers have gone down on the people that have OD'd is because of Narcan, because people are running around with Narcan in their hands. And in fact, when I was there in Ohio, there was a girl actually in front of the state house. I didn't see it. A cop told me about it right after it happened, but she OD'd. She was one of the protesters. She OD'd. A cop was able to save her life with Narcan. So, I mean, this is the issues that we're dealing with in our country, or maybe that we're not dealing with, right? Right? Because, you know, we are being used and pitted against one another instead of solving problems. And I think you're going to hear Marsha Blackburn talk about this, you know, reconciliation. Instead of solving issues and problems, we're fighting one another. And that just can't be. I want you to hear this clip. This was me last night. I usually don't do this. I don't like to play clips where I'm in it, you know, I'm talking. But this was what it was like on the ground in Columbus, Ohio last night on Sean Hannity here. Listen to this clip.
Absolutely, Sean. And I asked people that exact question, but there's an enormous sense of frustration here in Columbus, Ohio, and it's throughout the community. You can feel it even behind me, over 300 people protesting. They feel that something needs to be done to rectify the issues that they have with their law enforcement. They're standing right here in front of the Columbus, Ohio Police Department. People have been out on the streets all day, and I spoke to quite a few of them. Here's what some of them had to say.
What do you think is going on here? Why do you think there's this sense of like this feeling of dread that's causing people to come out into the streets and stand up and protest?
Well, I think we've been here before. It happened last summer, and I think, you know, we're here again. So I think that this is something that at this point, you know, in a way feels familiar. And I think people are exhausted and fed up and angry and are getting more and more comfortable to stand up about it.
For a brief moment, you thought you were getting to experience some form of justice, and that was snatched away for you even before you found out that you could have that little second to pause and say, well, maybe there is a justice system.
It's just getting old. Just the same thing happening over and over and over again. Like, yeah, we got justice for George Floyd with Derek Chauvin, but we still took a step back.
I got to tell you, it's hard because you know there's this enormous frustration. You know that there's people out there, they want their voices to be heard, whether it's in underprivileged communities in Columbus, Ohio, or Chicago, or, you know, what happened with the George Floyd and then the eventual verdict where a number of people felt there was vindication. And then you had others like lawmakers coming out and say, well, that's just not enough. That's just not enough. Or if we don't get our way, we should incite rioting. Just listen to this. I'm not making this stuff up. Listen to Representative Maxine Waters. Listen to what they are doing to this nation. And then I'm going to ask you to think about this. Don't let these politicians in Washington, D.C. dictate how you are going to feel about your neighbor. Don't let the media do it. Don't let anyone else do it. We as Americans have made it through far worse. We're going to make it through this. As long as these people like Maxine Waters and others who basically don't care about you, they don't care about your community, they don't care about who you are, they don't care about where you've been, they care only about one thing, retaining their power and using you to do that. I want you to hear Maxine Waters and tell me if this is okay.
And so, yes, I would like to see the bill in Congress pass on police reform, but I know that the right wing, the racists, are opposed to it, and I don't know what's going to happen to it, but I know this, we've got to stay in the street, and we've got to demand justice.
As a black man, despite all of the efforts, I feel like nothing changes, and George Floyd is waking so many people up. yet nothing has happened, despite the rhetoric. Like, what needs to happen that's different this year than all the years before?
We're looking for a guilty verdict. We're looking for a guilty verdict, and we're looking to see if all of the talk that took place and has been taking place after they saw what happened to George Floyd, if nothing does not happen, then we know that we've got to not only stay in the street, but we've got to fight for justice.
But we've got to fight for justice. We've got to fight for justice. There was also another clip where she was talking about, you know, we got to get out there and not, it was a word like, it was like confront. It was being confrontational. So she's actually saying to people, get out there and fight. Look, there is a jury, a judge and a jury, and there is a system. It's not perfect. It's not perfect because I saw what happened during the Russia hoax, right? The Department of Justice did absolutely nothing. A bunch of senior officials from the Obama administration just walked away after stomping all over the Constitution and tearing up the president's family, President Trump, that is, and him, and doing whatever they wanted. They were just abusing power left and right, and they got away with it because nobody, not even a Republican Department of Justice, did anything about it. So justice is not perfect, but it's better than most places. I have been to places where the justice system is completely sold out, where people have no justice. Or like, for crying out loud, in Iran, where the UN commission, where the United Nations voted to have Iran on the UN commission of women on women's rights. How is that even possible? That a nation that doesn't even want women to uncover their hair, to show their hair, right? And Iranian women stand up to that all the time, nor drive a car, nor have any rights, marriage rights, anything. That they are going to be on the Women's Rights Commission. By the way, according to what we're seeing and the information that is out there, the U.S. and other Western nations maybe voted for that. So thank the Biden administration for the hypocrisy of it all. I grew up in Saudi Arabia. I'm not saying that I didn't love the food and the people and that I didn't have an appreciation for being in other parts of the world. I mean, it's different than Iran, of course, but it's still same strictness. But I remember, you know, my mom couldn't drive a car. You couldn't sit in the front seat of a car with a man that isn't your husband. You couldn't do this. You couldn't do that. But you'll never, ever, ever see the feminist Democrats, you know, stand up and say that. You know, the same way. In fact, it was like Hillary Clinton went to Saudi Arabia and with her, you know, did a big speech there. And I mean, it's crazy. Nobody ever wants to stand up for anybody else's rights. And then you got Maxine Waters coming out and, you know, basically saying at this, you know, very tense moment, you know, the blame is on, you know, the law enforcement officials. Everybody else is at fault. There is no common sense anymore. It's like, if we don't get what we want, we're just going to go out in the streets and riot and go crazy and just, you know, we're going to feed into that instead of being the grown up, right? Because I get it. Kids are frustrated. By the way, most of the college students that I saw in Ohio, you know, these are really good kids. Not all of them. I'm sure there's some bad apples, but for the most part, I think they want to be good. I think they want to do the right thing. I think that they have been inundated by their professors and everybody else in the media that the only recourse is to fight back and get in the streets and riot if they don't get their way. I mean, this is called brainwashing. And this is what's happened in our country. So while we were, you know, standing back and, you know, thinking our kids were being educated, you know, with the ability to come up with their own ideas and thoughts, they were really just literally, for the most part, being brainwashed by leftist professors who have told them that we are responsible for all the problems in the world and that we've got to be revolutionaries and, you know, burn Dr. Seuss books and make everybody shame everyone who doesn't believe their way. Isn't that crazy? It used to be that universities were like, the open, we got to be open-minded. We've got to hear everybody's thoughts. But while we were doing that, you know, freedom comes with a very heavy price. While we were open and free, it was like the communists and the leftists and the renegades. And, you know, they were in there saying, oh, it's all America's fault. And then it became just every professor that they hired. It wasn't a debate anymore. It wasn't anything that we could talk about, not on national policy, not on foreign policy. It became most of our universities just an area where our children would be brainwashed and they would end up hating America. It's so insane. I don't even understand it. I don't think it happens everywhere, but I do see it happening. That is a reality. We see it. We hear it. And we know what's happening. We're censoring everything. We can't even talk on Twitter the same way. I mean, even companies are censoring us. It's like we're self-censoring. It's like we have this amazing constitution that grants us all kinds of freedoms. By the way, Maxine Waters, maybe you should talk about how awesome this nation is sometimes and about how the fact that, you know, this verdict came in, people stood up to that. A jury found him guilty. Okay, law enforcement officer on all counts for what happened to George Floyd. You know, Derek Chauvin paid the price, but we can't even move on because it's just not enough. Because the politicians are stealing everything. They want to take us and divide us so that they can just, it's like they're feeding off their own beast. And they don't care what happens to our children. They don't care what happens to our nation. They don't really care because they're sitting here in Washington, guys, in the big bubble, you know, doing whatever they want, protecting their establishment. That's the reason why they hated Trump so much, because he was just like not even in the establishment. He didn't belong to the, you know, the secret party here in Washington. He wasn't up on all their crazy lobbying efforts and everything else that they got going on here, you know, in Washington, D.C. That's why they hated him. I want you to hear, though, this is so crazy. I literally had to laugh at this, and I don't want to laugh at tragic situations. But for some reason, Nancy Pelosi, she just has a way of taking a situation and making it just so ridiculous. Listen to what... Okay, just listen to Nancy Pelosi and then we'll talk about it. Listen to this.
Thank you, George Floyd, for sacrificing your life for justice, for being there to call out to your mom. How heartbreaking was that? Call out for your mom. I can't breathe. But because of you and because of thousands, millions of people around the world who came out for justice, your name will always be synonymous with justice.
What in the world is wrong with Nancy Pelosi? Does she just have too much Bailey's ice cream in her freezer? What is going on with her? I am positive George Floyd did not want to die so that he could be like, his name could be synonymous with justice. That is ridiculous. She basically just thanked George Floyd for being dead. Thank you, George Floyd, for dying. No, Nancy, nobody. I mean, I will. Okay. All right. I could go somewhere, but I'm not going to. But George Floyd did not, you know, you don't need to thank him for dying. He died. And the, you know, the situation is tragic. It's horrible. And you don't need to go there. That's ridiculous. You need, these lawmakers are just, I can't even fathom what's going on in their minds. Look, I got another clip. I got to play these clips. I mean, this is AOC. This verdict is not justice. Listen to this.
This verdict is not justice.
Oh, I should have used a higher voice.
Frankly, I don't even think we call it full accountability because there are multiple officers that were there. I also don't want this moment to be framed as this system working, because it's not working.
No, because the system that AOC wants is that same. And by the way, I did say that, you know, I mean, I said it with such a low voice, and AOC has got like this really high pitched voice that I can never get to. So, but she's showing you guys who she really is, right? She is a full on leftist, socialist, leftist. She believes in that. She wants to lie to you about all of the environmental things that she thinks needs to be done just to take control of, you know, whatever, the country. Like, I mean, it's like, we have to do all this and you guys have to follow the rules. I got to tell you, I know it's a little segue here because it goes right into how our nation is changing right before our eyes. And there's like, we're grasping at straws and we can't do anything to stop it. I'm in the airport, right, coming back from Columbus, and I start noticing this. It's not about COVID-19 anymore. Like, actually, it's now germs. So they don't say COVID-19 on the recording over the airport in Columbus. I have to listen more carefully in the other airports, but it's like, please stay 6 feet away from anybody else so you don't pass on germs. You don't want to get germs, do you? You don't want to talk to another human being, do you? Don't ever hug anyone again. You know, it's no, they didn't say all that, but they did say stand 6 feet away so that you don't like get any germs. America, you, everyone out there listening to this right now, we literally are supposed to get germs. That's how we become immune. We're not supposed to live in a bubble. Please, God. If Maxine Waters asks you to buy a bubble suit or AOC, just say no. We have to stop somewhere. We cannot live in a bubble. Look, Washington lives in a bubble, and then they say things like, okay, play it again. Thank you, George Floyd. Thank you, George Floyd, for dying. These people don't know anything. They don't know anything. And then they put people in charge that don't know anything. And people that don't even have any common sense, right? So I just want you to realize what's happening right before our very eyes. We need, it's like right in front of our face, right? It's like when you lose your keys and you're like looking around the house for the car keys and they're like right there, or like the glasses on your head, right? That's what it felt like when I walked through Columbus, Ohio's airport. I was like, wow, wait a minute. Now they're telling us that we have to stay 6 feet apart because of germs, and that the CDC is warning us about that. When did you ever have to stay 6 feet apart because of germs in past history? Other than like, okay, an outbreak of something, right? But not like permanently. But mind you, the reason why they are doing this is because this is going to be permanent. They want this to be permanent. They being the leftists. This is how you start gaining control, right, of people. You start dictating, putting down rules, making sure that, you know, you scare the masses, scare the masses. Remember that James O'Keefe, not me, James O'Keefe, right, from Project Veritas, caught the CNN editor saying that. I don't have the clip of that right now, but you guys look it up on the internet. Look it up on the internet where he says CNN is just out there. And it's true. To make money, they want to scare you. I'm not trying to scare you. I'm just laying out the facts. The facts are, is that I was in an airport and they told me to stay away from my fellow people. Like I just started talking to people. Nobody was 6 feet apart. We were all in a huge line. Like, you know, we had our masks on, but everybody was like laughing about that. Like, what? If we stood 6 feet apart and the security line was so long, never had we ever seen it before like that in Columbus. We would have literally been out in the parking lot. Like if we were like actually following the directions, we would have been like, oh, out in the parking lot, maybe up on the second or third level of parking, because it would have been that crazy. I want you guys to think about what is happening around us while we're so busy. They're trying to dictate laws and dictate our lives. And that's something that we have to pay attention to because we have a constitution still in this country. COVID did not erase the constitution. COVID did not erase the Constitution. Remember that. That Constitution stands. That Constitution stands, and it means something. And it means something. That's why I have the great Senator Marsha Blackburn on the show. And, you know, she is someone that has actually puts herself out there, fights for the Constitution, fights for her constituents in Tennessee. And more than that, she fights for the American people. No doubt, Marsha Blackburn is probably one of the most fiercest senators, you know, out there. Somebody that isn't afraid to take on the establishment and tell them how she feels. Thank you so much, Senator, for joining me today. And, you know, before we got on, the senator was commenting that I have the biggest cup of coffee in the world that she's seen. And it says it was the dog. It was actually a joke. It was actually a joke from my husband. He thinks it's very funny. And the only cup that I could find, I stayed up all night, it seems like, because I was in Ohio last night. There were a number of protests, you know, for Micaiah Bryant going on in the city of Columbus. And across the nation, we are once again, you know, feeling this divide, Senator. And I listen to the young people. I don't want, you know, everybody has the right to their own feelings. And when you're hurt, you say a lot of things, right? But I feel that the Democratic lawmakers are really pushing this racial divide in our country in such a way that it, in some cases, I'm very concerned it will be almost irreparable.
Oh, my hope is that we can move to a point of reconciliation in this country. And my hope is also that we can move to a point of robust, respectful, bipartisan debate. Oh, that is what has kept this nation strong, is sitting down and talking through issues, having that public square that said, come, express your opinion, let's agree to disagree, honoring peaceful protest, and making certain that individuals have the ability to approach their government and to have these respectful debates. And my hope is that we will see people move forward and say, let's reconcile our differences for the good of the country, for the good of future generations. Because, Sarah, if you cut off debate from people who are different than you, then what you see is your sphere of influence, your right. universe of friends. They shrink because you only allow people into your circle who are just like you. And diversity serves our nation well. Diversity of opinion.
Right.
And of approach. It serves us well.
And you brought up a very important word, Senator, because you talk about reconciliation. And I think that is so important. I think right now in our nation, what we need more than anything is for people to sit down and talk. And I heard that not only from law enforcement officers who were on the streets in Ohio, and I got to tell you, it was fascinating because it was before we got on Sean's show to talk about what was going on and to show the people in the streets. But there was a rally earlier in front of the State House in Columbus, and a woman actually passed out. Who was her first line of defense? Was the police officers that were there. She was a protester. They got her to the hospital. Another person at the rally actually OD'd on heroin, and an officer was the first line to save this young lady's life with Narcan. And so when you think about, you know, the both sides of the issue and how it affects everyone, and you could see that the officers who were standing there were frustrated. They felt like, I mean, a lot of them, you can just see it. They feel like, you know, What are we doing this for? Like, we're being the targets. And then also on the other side, when you talk to the young people, it's like, we're the targets. And I think that when you have lawmakers just feeding into that hate, just creating more and more of a divide. I want to play a clip, and this is Press Secretary Jen Psaki, and I felt this was completely irresponsible of her about this situation and what the Biden administration is doing about systemic racism, supposedly, in the United States of America.
Has the president been briefed on 16-year-old Micaiah Bryant being shot and killed by police in Columbus, Ohio yesterday? It happened moments before the Chauvin verdict came out.
Yes. I said to you yes, and let me just say, since you gave me the opportunity, the killing of 16-year-old Micaiah Bryant by the Columbus police is tragic. She was a child. We're thinking of her friends and family and the communities that are hurting and grieving her loss. We know that police violence disproportionately impacts Black and Latino people and communities, and that Black women and girls, like Black men and boys, experience higher rates of police violence. We also know that there are particular vulnerabilities that children in foster care like Micaiah face. And her death came, as you noted, just as America was hopeful of a step forward after the traumatic and exhausting trial of Derek Chauvin and the verdict that was reached. So our focus is on working to address systemic racism and implicit bias head on, and of course to passing laws and legislation that will put much needed reforms into place at police departments around the country.
I felt that it was completely irresponsible of her to take it to that level and to basically put the focus on police officers as if they're criminals. What happened was tragic. She's right. I've covered, you know, underprivileged communities, underserved communities, whether they're white, whether they're Latino, whether they're Black. There is more crime, more violence. There's less family structure. But to say that police officers who do put their lives on the line every single day, you know, to create a deeper divide when there's already so much hurt is irresponsible. I mean, asking you straight out, do you believe there is systemic racism in the United States?
You know, Sarah, racism is wrong in any way, shape, or form. Extremism is wrong in any way, shape, or form. And that is something where everyone agrees. Our law enforcement officers and our emergency responders have a tremendous burden that they carry every single day, when they put on their uniform and when they show up for work. With this situation in Ohio, we need to allow the investigation to go forward and for them to be able to determine exactly what it was that happened. I understand that there was an issue even the day prior with a teen in the state that is likewise being investigated. And I know that I've heard some of those officers say we need to give some time for this investigation to take place. The loss of life is always tragic.
It is.
And, you know, this is one of the reasons we need to move toward a time of reconciliation. And we've worked on a reconciliation resolution here in the Senate because we think it would be a good thing for
this
country.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. What is the reconciliation legislation?
One of the things that we've learned is through our nation's history, from time to time, we've had a day where the focus would be on reconciling differences and just looking at the greater good and the reason that we are here. So we have worked on a resolution. We're getting it into form so that it can be properly filed. We would hope that we have bipartisan sponsorship and that it could be something that is bicameral, that the House and the Senate, that our nation would pause, would have a time of prayer for our nation, would commit to reconciliation and commit to that respect and listening and hearing the difference of opinion, because it is vital for our country to continue operating as a democratic republic, which is the structure of our government.
Let's talk about, you know, some of the issues that you've been working on in Congress. And I agree with you on that. I mean, in the Senate, Senator Blackburn, I agree with you on that. But one of the big issues that you've been focused on, too, is also the Iran nuclear deal. Yes. And preventing President Biden, you know, from circumventing the U.S. Senate to basically reenter the deal again. And that's what this administration is trying to do. It's almost like they're trying to relive or revive Obama's legacy, right? I almost feel like everything that President Obama did when President Trump went in and just flipped it upside down and said, no, we're not going to do this anymore. We know Iran is a tyrannical nation. The money goes towards terrorism most of the time, feeding proxy wars all over the world. We're the target of Iran. What is going on right now in the Senate to try to prevent that? I think it's so important for Americans to understand this fight.
You know, it is important to understand because what the Biden administration is trying to do, what they're seeking to do, is to revive the Iran nuclear deal. And we know what happened with that. We all remember the pallets of cash being flown over to Iran. And as you said, That is money that goes into proxy wars. Iran is also trying to up the enrichment level on uranium that they are enriching, not using this for nuclear power, but using this for weaponry. So we believe that with the Iran nuclear deal during the Obama years, they found a way to circumvent Congress on this.
Right.
So this should be treated as a treaty, and it should be forced. We're forcing the issue of this coming to the Senate.
Do you think it's you're going to have enough to pass this?
We certainly are going to try, and we will not know until we try. I think there are people on each side of the aisle that now, in hindsight, looking at that Iran nuclear deal, realize that this should have been treated as a treaty.
Well, we know that the JCPOA, we know that people that were inspectors that were sent there could never actually inspect anything. It was always set up to just basically let Iran get away with whatever they wanted to get away with. I mean, no matter how anybody tries to explain it to me, every time I looked at the deal, every time we saw stories coming out of Iran, we were stunned, because once again, it was like, the U.S. gave up everything. The world gives up everything. Iran gave up nothing. And now it looks like they could have it back again.
And it is horrifying to think that they could reposition themselves to the point that they would give Iran, lift sanctions, give Iran the power to operate, the power to enrich uranium. And Sarah, as you have heard me say, the new axis of evil, Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea. You have to look at the neighborhood that these guys are playing in, and you have to realize who their buddies are. These are not people that wish us well. So we ought not to do anything that is going to help them move forward. We should be holding them to account. And this is why we're saying this: if you're trying to do something with Iran, you have to bring it to the Senate. It has to withstand that vote for an up or down vote in the Senate.
Right. Another issue before I let you go, I know you're running back and forth. You know, you got a lot of work to do on the Senate today, but I can't let you go without asking about the border, because I feel, since we've had all these horrible tragedies, and then we've, of course, had the George Floyd verdict, everybody's focus is now away from the U.S.-Mexico border. And just last night, I was talking to Chris Cabrera, the vice president of the National Border Patrol Council, and my good friend, Buck Sexton. Everybody should listen to his podcast and his radio show as well. He's down there with them. And Buck said, we were just there for minutes, and kids were flooding into the border. And when he asked them, are there any more behind? You know, how many more? They said mountains. That's what Buck was telling me. Mountains of children. So we know that these kids are being trafficked into the U.S. We know that right. Some of them are being abandoned even by their own families. Some of them are just on their own or have been separated, traveling with these predators, these cartels, these coyotes. And we also have family units and people from all over the world. And now we're not even paying attention to it as much. You know, it's like a cycle of news. What do you have to say about that? What do you think's going on here? And do you think the administration is going to do anything to stop this?
Well, this is Biden's border policy. This is his immigration policy. And realize that you have a Department of Homeland Security secretary who does not believe in secure borders. Imagine that. And so the cartels heard what Biden said, which was basically, y'all come. And what they're doing is opening the border. They are sending these illegal entrants into different communities around the country. So every town's a border town. Every state is a border state. Bear in mind, Border Patrol has apprehended people from 55 different countries. They have known terrorists out of Yemen that they have apprehended. They have a convicted murderer that they apprehended at the border. The word is out that you need to bring a child with you. Mm-hmm. So the child recycling program that the cartels run is in full effect at this point in time.
Well, and that's what the Border Patrol agents were saying. They're saying, look, we have to have a rule of law or we become the last leg of the smuggling operation. How is it possible? Right. And I talked to people in Mexico about this. I was just in Tijuana. I spoke to a pastor who told me, look, we're literally turning these kids back over to people that left them with predators. And that's we're doing it. We're delivering them and we're paying for it.
That's right. They show up, they get abandoned after the person gets across the border, then they get turned around and sent back to their family. Sometimes the person in charge of them is with the cartel. They get assigned to another family. They come back over. It is the cartel's child recycling program. It is atrocious. Young girls as young as 10, 11, 12 who come into our custody have to be given pregnancy tests because of the violation that is taking place against women and girls. It is a crisis, a national security crisis, a humanitarian crisis, an environmental crisis. And God bless our Border Patrol for showing up every day and doing their job.
Right. They're the first line of defense for so many of the people that are crossing the border. Senator, what can the listeners do? What can we do to make a difference? What can we do to be actively involved in protecting our communities and helping others? I mean, I know so many Americans don't want to see these children suffering. They don't want to see them living in a situation that is, for the most purposes, not environmentally sane. And our Border Patrol agents, they need our support. What can we do? Do we contact our lawmakers? What do we do?
Yes, absolutely. Your local officials, state lawmakers, reach out to your federal lawmakers. And then just be aware of what is taking place. Fentanyl is pouring across our border now. Work with healthcare professionals. Work with schools. What is being taught in your schools? What is being preached in your churches? Who is standing up and helping with this? These are all things where people, the citizenry, as I say, we the people need to stand up and be the people right now on a lot of different fronts, because we are going to lose this country if we do not.
Well, that's why you're the senator of the great state of Tennessee. You're amazing. Thank you so much, Senator Blackburn,
for
being part of the podcast.
Thank you for all you do.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, ma'am. I hope you come back on the show very soon.
You got it. Take care.
So this is the reason why I have been going back to the border, because this story, this crisis is ongoing. And it's exactly what Senator Blackburn said. This is a crisis that was created, this one in particular, by the Biden administration. I know it's been going on for decades. We've had an issue with the border for decades, but we saw that subside under President Trump. We did, because there was a rule of law, and there's a reason for laws. There's a reason for them. It's not because we don't want people from all over the world. Our nation is a melting pot of people from all over the world. My mom was an immigrant. I'm the firstborn of my mom's family here in the United States, right? So we are a melting pot of people. I love it. I love being able to go to restaurants. We need more workers in restaurants right now. I mean, that's a big issue. But I love being able to go to Mexican restaurants and Indian restaurants. And, you know, if you so desire, maybe get some British food. It's not that good, though, right? Right? I'm just throwing it out there. But I want us to be the melting pot, but I want it to be done the right way. The children that are coming across that border are suffering. They are in the hands of these terrible predators. And we have to point that out. And by the way, our nation's national security, our economy, are also in jeopardy because of these terrible policies. You know, that's where I'm going to leave it, because I am going to be coming back to you from the border. I'm planning on going back to Texas. I have a special on Tijuana that I want to get for you in future upcoming episodes. I want to talk to you a little bit about that and the people that are taking advantage, basically, of America's, our taxpayer dollars, right? The $4 trillion that President Biden wants to give to Central America and to these NGOs, non-governmental organizations, with regard to this crisis. We're going to be talking about that. But before I go any further, I want to talk to you about what's happening in outer space. Now, Rich, who's one of the producers on the show, informed me, this is before I get to the whole Russia story. I have this great story. Russia plans to launch its own space station after quitting the International Space Station. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But I want to go back to this thing of space debris, because I was talking to Rich about this and I was like, well, you know, maybe the International Space Station, I mean, if you look at it, it looks like it's falling apart. It looks like it's just, you know, on its last legs. Maybe it's not, but I have a feeling it is. I mean, it's got like some kind of issues on the outside. It looks old. It's probably cramped up. I'm sure we can build something better. I'm sure the Russians think they can build something better. They're planning on putting it into orbit in 2030. But imagine, where does this stuff go? I was like, Rich, where does it go? I mean, does it just shoot off into space? Does it break apart? And he's like, oh, I listen to this great podcast. See, he doesn't only listen to my podcast, but apparently the How It Works podcast is pretty good. And the How It Works podcast explains what happens to space debris. And apparently we have this big belt. Now, I'm not a scientist here. I'm not trying to say I know what I'm talking about. I heard this in a very brief explanation from Rich, and I'm passing it along, kind of like telephone. So you got to go to the How It Works podcast if you're interested in this. But apparently we have a belt of space debris, like a crazy belt of space debris around our planet. And eventually we'll just be trapped here. We won't even be able to get to Mars. That's what Rich told me. Don't stick with that. Don't say this verbatim unless you listen to the How It Works podcast. And then you can say it over and over and over again. But apparently we might get trapped here in our own space debris. Doesn't surprise me. Please don't tell AOC, because if you tell AOC, then she's going to start a whole new thing for green space, and then I am going to just lose my mind. I'm going to lose my mind because she's going to try to make space a leftist issue, and I just can't have that right now. We just cannot deal with that. We have too much to deal with in America. But back to, you know, the Russians and their plans to launch their own space station. Remember, everybody's competing for space, guys. The Chinese, us, the Russians, you know, this is a topic that I absolutely love, and even the aliens. I'm sure they are out there competing for our space. This project, though, would mark a new chapter for Russian space exploration and an end to more than two decades of close cooperation with the United States aboard the aging International Space Station. That's actually kind of sad, because I think that it's important that we work together, like we're not so competitive in space, because it is such an unknown for all of us. And we want to make sure that we're doing the right things out there. Apparently, Russian cosmonauts have worked with their counterparts from the U.S. and 16 other countries with the International Space Station since 1988. Right now, their plans to get this new space station up, and apparently it's going to be Russian-centric, they're not going to share it with us, is 2030. I think we should, you know, like with Elon Musk, build like the most awesome space station, like huge, you know, like use the diagrams that we've seen on like Star Trek and everything, you know, like make it like awesome with a bar and, you know, comfortable chairs. I always hate it when I watch space movies where everything's like metal and concrete, because, you know, our lazy butts would not build a spaceship like that. We would not build a spaceship that's all concrete and hard unless we were like, you know, robots, right? We would be building them with like cushiony chairs. It would be back like the old Star Trek, right? Like cool hairdos and, you know, a bar at the end of the space station somewhere. And then eventually, like, you know, I mean, this is if we were all traveling there, right? Not just doing science. Deputy Prime Minister, and I love saying Russian names because I say them so wrong, Yuri Borisov, and I'm positive I did not say his name correctly, told Russian television during the weekend that Moscow would give notice to its partners that it would just leave the ISS project in 2025. So they're just going to walk off the International Space Station. So I think this story is missing something, because I'm wondering, what happens to the International Space Station once the Russians leave? And, and by the way, they plan on spending $6 billion to get their project launched. So that's just a little bit of foreign news for you. And I mean, it does affect us in the United States. And I think it's good to sometimes get out of all of the crazy news cycle that makes us sad and depressed. And, you know, once we take a step back, we can find some humor in things, or look at space and find some, you know, maybe hope that, that, you know, things will always get better. Or there's always something to look forward to. In those moments, I think we find some kind of resolution. I, like I said at the beginning of the show, right? I know a lot has been happening in our country. We are very divided right now. I say, don't let these politicians and media divide us anymore. I say it's important for all of us to just go out and listen to someone, talk to someone, say thank you to someone, say thank you to a police officer, get out there and, you know, let them know that they're not all bad apples, you know, that you respect them and that you honor their work and that they put their lives on the front line. Say thank you to a soldier. Say thank you to an Air Force veteran or, you know, whoever, whatever branch of the military they belong to a first responder. You know, and even to some of our lawmakers, if they're actually doing something, I mean, just go up and say thank you. And to our neighbors, more importantly, to our neighbors in our community, let's find a way to connect again. I know I'm sounding very hippie right now, but it's really that important. We don't want to be fighting each other. We don't want to be tearing each other apart in the streets. That's not who we are as a nation. We are one nation, right? We are one nation under God. And we should live up to those expectations. We are the envy of the world. Let's not change this. Let's remember what we have fought for since the beginning, and let's keep doing it. Thank you so much for being a part of the Sarah Carter Show. Remember, you can get all of my social media connections on sarahacarter.com. Go to sarahacarter.com to read the latest stories. I still have some employees, although it's shrinking now. and we've got great stories out there. Go to the podcast, please, wherever you get your podcast, download this podcast. Remember, you know, I feel like we're family. I will always bring you the top stories, always bring you the latest in the news. I'm out here in the swamp. I'll be there for you, fighting for you. And as I know you will be fighting for me. Thank you so much for being a part of this show. Remember, here at the Sarah Carter Show, we are taking the story back. Today, I'm joined by Rebecca Weber, the CEO of the Association for Mature American Citizens. It's also known as AMAC. Can you share a little bit with the audience about your father, Dan Weber, and how he founded AMAC and why?
My father formed AMAC after he recognized that the AARP really was not representing his values. And those values were really faith, family, and freedom. And my father believed in America's greatness. He believed that there was what he described as a cultural shift occurring in our country. He thought that the very, very foundation, the Constitution, was being disregarded. And we saw that the power of government was growing and individual freedoms were diminishing, were being threatened. And to get more specific was in 2006 when he said to me that he was canceling his AARP membership. And I said to my father, why would you do that? And he said, well, they've just named Harry Belafonte Man of the Year. And he went on to say that Harry Belafonte had commented to Hugo Chavez saying that George W. Bush was the greatest terrorist threat in America. And my father said something is wrong with that. So he saw the AARP make this sharp left turn. And that was when he said, let's form AMAC. And I said, let's do it.
Rebecca, thanks so much for being with me today. I'm honored to have you and AMAC as a sponsor for the Sarah Carter Show. You know, for more information, folks, visit AMAC.us/Carter.